Okay, well, we're looking at the Feast of First Fruits today. It's the third feast associated with the Spring Feast. And again, like we said, the Spring Feasts are associated with the first coming of the Messiah. Now, if you recall, the Feast of the Passover is associated with redemption, right? We looked at that both from an historical context and also the prophetic fulfillment of that. And the Feast of Unleavened Bread is associated as a type of the burial, right, of the Messiah. And we looked at that last week. Now we're going to look at the Feast of the First Fruits, which focuses in on the resurrection. Okay, so let's take a look at Leviticus chapter 23 and read the description of the feast there concerning first fruits. That's in verses 9 through 14. Okay, so if anybody has that section there, they can go ahead and read it for us.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when ye be come into the land which I will give unto you, and shall reap the harvest thereof, then ye shall bring the sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest unto the priest. And he shall lay the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted for you. On the morrow, after the Sabbath, priest shall wave it, and ye shall offer that day when ye wave the sheaf and Aaron without blemish for the first year for a burnt offering on the Lord, and the meat offering thereof shall be 2/10 deals of fine flour mingled with oil, an offering made by fire unto the Lord for a sweet savor, and the drink offering thereof shall be of wine, the fourth part of an hin. And ye shall eat neither bread, nor parched corn, nor green ears, until the selfsame day that ye have brought an offering unto your God. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations and all your dwellings.
Okay, so the Feast of the First Fruits, you know, there are three agricultural harvest festivals, if you will, that the Lord required every Israelite male to appear before him in Jerusalem, right? Remember what those three feasts are? The Passover, right? Pentecost, and Tabernacles, right? That's in Deuteronomy 16:16. And the Passover was associated with the first fruits of the barley harvest, okay? Take a look at 2 Samuel chapter 21, verse 9. 2 Samuel chapter 21, verse
9. Them, the Gibeonites, they hang them in the hill before the Lord, and they fell all seven together and put to death in the days of the harvest, in the first days, in the beginning of the barley harvest.
The beginning of the barley harvest, and the reference to the first days there is a reference to the first days of the year, okay? You remember how we said that in the spiritual calendar with beginning with the Exodus, that the Passover was in the first month, correct? Those were the first days of the year. So again, the barley harvest, again, associated with particularly the Passover, the first fruits. Okay, then in Pentecost is the first fruits of the wheat harvest. If you look at that Exodus chapter 34, verse 22, we can read that there. Somebody want to go turn there and read it? Exodus 34, verse 22. Okay. And the Feast of Weeks, of course, is Pentecost, okay? And that's the first fruits of the wheat harvest. And then, of course, Tabernacles is associated with the final fruit harvest, which is in Deuteronomy 16, verse 13. So you can read that as well. Deuteronomy 16, verse 13. We also saw a reference to that in that Exodus 34 passage. We talked about the ingathering at the end. Deuteronomy 16:13.
Thou shalt observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days. After that thou hast gathered in thy corn and thy wine.
And and the wine, okay, the fruit of the vine. Okay, so a very interesting thing in terms of these harvest festivals. When you think of a book in the Bible that specifically has an emphasis on those harvest festivals, what book comes to mind in the Old Testament? It's an historical book. Begins with the letter R. Yeah, Ruth, very good. Take a look at Ruth chapter 2. Ruth chapter 2. Look at verses 21 and 20. Read verses 21 to 23. Two of the harvests are mentioned there. They're both the first fruits harvest. Look at Ruth chapter 2, verses 21 to 23. Anybody got it? It's right after Judges.
And Ruth the Moabite said, "He said unto me also, thou shalt keep fast by my young men until they have ended all my harvest. And Naomi said unto Ruth her daughter-in-law, It is good, my daughter, that thou go out with these maidens, that they meet thee not in any other field. So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean unto the end of the barley harvest and of wheat harvest, and dwelt with her mother-in-law."
And the barley harvest, the wheat harvest, those are the first fruits harvest, right? We saw that. That's Passover, Pentecost, right? Notice in verse 22 is a very interesting thing. Not only did he allow her to, and this was a Moabite, this was like someone who had come out of idolatry, right? Not only was she allowed to be full partaker of those first fruits harvest, look at in verse 22, Naomi tells Ruth, "It's good, my daughter, that thou go with his maidens, that they meet thee not," what, "in any other field." She was given to even have of the choicest field of the nation. Okay, Boaz was a type of Messiah. Okay, and she tasted of the richest of the land. Okay, so that's a very interesting observation there. Now, when we looked at the passage in Leviticus chapter 23, we noticed that in the first feast of the first fruits, they were to bring a sheaf, right? A sheaf. Now, what is it? What is a sheaf? The Hebrew word for sheaf is the word omer. Okay, just means a measure of dry things. Okay. Now, in terms of what an omer is, take a look at Exodus chapter 16, verse 36. Exodus chapter 16, verse 36. You'll find out the measure of an omer.
Now, an omer is the tenth part of an ephah.
An omer is the tenth part of an ephah. Okay? Now, if you look in the same chapter of Exodus 16, if you read verses 15 and 16 there, you find out what kind of a ration an omer was. Go ahead, verses 15 and 16.
"And when the children of Israel saw it, they said unto one another, It is manna, for they wist not what it was. And Moses said unto them, This is the bread which the Lord hath given you to eat. This is the thing which the Lord hath commanded. Gather of it every man according to his eating, an omer for every man, according to the number of your persons. Take ye every man for them which are his tents."
So an omer was the ration for an individual Israelite for the daily provision of the manna, correct? Now let's look at something very interesting. Go back to the book of Ruth, all right? And let's take a look at the kind of ration that she was given. Look at Ruth chapter 2, and somebody read verses 15 through 18. You got it? Ruth chapter 2, verses 15 to 18.
"When she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, Let her glean, even among the sheaves, and reproach her not. And let fall also some of the handfuls of purpose here, and leave them, that she may glean them and rebuke her not. So she gleaned in the field until even, and beat off that she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up, and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, and she brought forth, and gave to her that she had deserved after she was sufficed.
Now, this is very interesting. She was allowed, she got a measure of an ephah, right? An ephah is 10 omers, right? That was 10 times the provision of a daily Israelite in the wilderness. And this was a Moabitess, okay? A really nice type of what the Christ is going to be even to the Gentiles in the millennium. You see that? If, you know, you kind of put these things together, and you know, it hits like between the eyes there.
Well, she actually becomes part of the bloodline that leads to the...
Correct. Yeah, and that's even a greater honor.
Yeah.
And so it's just very interesting. You know, little details like that, you don't necessarily pick them up at first, but it's very interesting when you compare these things, you can see what is actually going on. Now, when we speak of sheaves... sheaves are often representative also of the Lord's people. Take a look at Genesis chapter 37 when we look at one of Joseph's dreams concerning his brethren. Take Genesis 37 verses 5 through 8. Okay. Genesis 37 verses 5 through 8. So you see that the sheaves were representative of the brethren, right? Of Joseph's brethren. Okay, so they are a type of individuals as well. Now, when we speak of the sheaf, of course, in Leviticus 23, the sheaf is kind of like the first of the first fruits, if you will, right? And as far as Israel was concerned, God uniquely claimed the firstborn of every man and beast, as well as the first fruits of the harvest for himself. Okay, take a look at Exodus chapter 13, verse 2. Exodus chapter 13, verse 2. What do you read there? Okay. Right. And that word sanctify, set apart for me, the firstborn, every man, every beast, right? And then, of course, in Exodus chapter 22, verse 29, it's also the first of the harvest there. You say Exodus 22, verse 29. So there you have it all together. You see, the firstborn of the people and the first fruits of the land, okay? That was, God himself uniquely claims that for himself. Okay, so the first fruits, again, focusing on he who is over all. And now, as far as the time of the observance of the first fruits, go back to Leviticus chapter 23, and let's see when that occurs. Leviticus chapter 23... Verse 11. When are they supposed to offer that sheaf up? According to verse 11.
Tomorrow after the Sabbath.
The morrow after the Sabbath during the Passover week. Okay? And it went as far as that first Passover was concerned, it was 3 days later. Okay? Take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 16, Verse 3. What do you read?
You shall eat the leavened bread with it 7 days. You shall eat unleavened bread with it. That is the bread of affliction, for you came out of the land of Egypt in haste, that you may remember the day in which you came out of the land of Egypt all the days of your life.
Okay, so the Passover feast, like we said, is a week feast, okay? Commemorating the exodus from Egypt. Now, concerning when they actually were finally redeemed, take a look at Numbers chapter 33. We're going to read verses 5 through 8, and you'll see the 3 days there. From the time that they left Egypt until they actually crossed the Red Sea and actually saw Pharaoh and his host no more. Numbers chapter 33, verses 5 through 8.
Days
journey, right? They come to the sea. Alright? Now here's something that's really interesting. Okay? Take a look at Exodus chapter 14, verse 3. Exodus chapter 14, verse 3. What do you read? The wilderness has shut them in. They go 3 days into the wilderness to smack up against the sea, right? Pharaoh says, I got him boxed, right? You know, the Lord had that 3-day journey mapped out long before that Israel ever left Egypt, okay? And here's where we can see it. Look at Exodus chapter 3, verse 18. Exodus chapter 3, verse 18. What do you read?
And they will heed your voice, and you shall come, you and the elders of Israel, to the king of Egypt, and you shall say to him, the Lord God of the Hebrews has met with us, and now please let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God.
Sounds like the Lord had that 3 days already in mind, didn't he?
Yeah.
This is at the burning bush, right? Take a look at Exodus chapter 5, verse 3.
And they said, the God of the Hebrews has met with us. Let us go, we pray thee, 3 days' journey into the desert, and sacrifice unto the Lord our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence or with sword.
Okay, and this is right before the plagues, okay? 3 days' journey again. Pharaoh's gotten fair notice that it's 3 days. Look at Exodus chapter 8, verse 27.
We will go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord our God as he shall command us.
See that? And this is, of course, after a lot of the plagues have fallen. So again, the Lord had this route mapped out for his people, the freedom, before they even made the trip, right? And before Israel ever got to know the haughtiness of the one that said, I've got these people boxed. He didn't have these people boxed. The Lord knew exactly what was going to happen in 3 days, right? And, you know, it's interesting that Israel's crossing of the Red Sea is actually given as a type by the Apostle Paul concerning our identification with the death and resurrection of Christ. Take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1-4.
Moreover, brethren, so not that you have the ear drink of that spiritual rock that Paul drank, that rock was Christ.
So he talks about the baptism or the identification with Moses. Now what happened when they crossed the Red Sea? They went down into the sea and they came up on the other side, right? What happened to the Lord after 3 days? He went into the grave and then he came up after 3 days, didn't he? Aren't we identified with that? The perfect type, okay? And so that basically is kind of like the stage set in terms of the historical context of how you can see. We saw how God blessed even the Moabitish Gentile, right? Concerning the fact of the an ample illustration of the first fruits and how she got multiplied more than even his own people did, right? And during the ration of in the wilderness, and of course the very pointing to the 3 days and the time that in the ground up with the resurrection and into the sea and up again on the other side. Okay, so the resurrection and the blessing that attends the resurrection upon his people, you see from the historical context of what we just looked at. There's a lot to go in concerning the prophetic fulfillment and the actual application spiritually of what that kind of means to us in our daily lives, but that's probably going to take a lot more than we have time for today. So we'll leave it at there for today. And next week, we're going to take a look at the next 2 points on your sheet, okay? The prophetic fulfillment and the spiritual application as far as our daily walk with the Lord, okay? So on that note, we'll conclude.